The rest of the men moved unsteadily on later that day, taking with them to give to his parents the pot metal medal that had been in the man's coat pocket, and the official commendation from the duchy that went with it. Polly had taken a look at it. It was printed, including the Duchess's signature, and the man's name had been filled in, rather cramped, because it was longer than average. The last few letters were rammed up tight together. It's little details like that which get remembered, as undirected white-hot rage fills the mind. Apart from the letter and the medal, all the man left behind was a tin mug and, on the floor, a stain which wouldn't scrub out. Corporal Strappy listened impatiently to a slightly adjusted version. Polly could see his mind working. The mug had belonged to a soldier. Now it belongs to another soldier. Those were the facts of the matter, and there wasn't much he could do about it. He resorted instead to the safer ground of general abuse.
"So you think you're smart, Parts?" he said.
"No, Corporal."
"Oh, so you're stupid, are you?"
"Well, I did enlist, Corporal," said Polly meekly. Somewhere behind Strappy, someone sniggered.
"I've got my eye on you, Parts," growled Strappy,
temporarily defeated.
"Just you put a foot wrong, that's all."
He strode off.
Said a voice beside Polly. She turned to see another youth, wearing second-hand clothes and an air of nervousness that didn't quite conceal some bubbling anger. He was big and red-haired, but his hair was cut so close that it was just head fuzz.
"You're Tonker, right?" she said.
"Yeah, and could I have a bottle of your shaving gear, right?"
Polly looked at a chin as free of hair as a billiard ball. The boy blushed.
"Got to start sometime, right?" he said defiantly.
"The razor'll need sharpening," said Polly.
"That's all right, I know how to do that," said Tonker.
Polly wordlessly handed over the mug and razor and took the opportunity to duck into the privy while everyone else was occupied. It was the work of a moment to put the socks in place. Anchoring them was a problem, which she solved by unwinding part of one sock and tucking it up under her belt. They felt odd, and strangely heavy for a little package of wool. Walking a little awkwardly, Polly went in to see what horrors breakfast would bring. It brought stale horse bread and sausage and very weak beer. She grabbed a sausage and a slab of bread and sat down. You had to concentrate to eat horse bread. There was a lot more about these days, a bread made from flour ground up with dried peas and beans and dried vegetable scrapings. It used to be made just for horses, to put them in fine condition. Now you hardly ever saw anything else on the table, and there tended to be less and less of it, too. You needed time and good teeth to work your way through a slice of horse bread, just like you needed a complete lack of imagination to eat a modern sausage. Polly sat and concentrated on chewing. The only other area of calm was around Private Maledict, who was drinking coffee like a young man relaxing in a sidewalk cafe, with an air of someone who has life thoroughly worked out. He nodded at Polly. Was that him in the privy, she wondered? I'd got back in just as Strappy started yelling and everyone started running around and rushing in and out. It could have been anyone. Do vampires use the privy? Well, do they? Has anyone ever dared ask?
Sleep well, he asked.
Yeah, did you? Said Polly.
I couldn't stand that shed, but Mr. Eyebrow kindly allowed me to use his cellar, said Maledict. Old habits die hard, you know. At least, he added, old acceptable habits. I've never felt happy not hanging down.
And you got coffee?
I carry my own supply, said Maledict, indicating an exquisite little silver and gilt coffee-making engine on the table by his cup. And Mr. Eyebrow kindly boiled some water for me.
He grinned, showing two long canine teeth.
It's amazing what you can achieve with a smile, Oliver.
Polly nodded.
Is Igor a friend of yours? She said.
At the next table, Igor had obtained a sausage, presumably raw, from the kitchen, and was watching it intently. A couple of wires ran from the sausage to a mug of the horrible vinegary beer, which was bubbling.
"Never seen him before in my life," said the vampire. "Of course. If you've met one, you have, in a sense, met them all. We had an Igor at home, wonderful workers, very reliable, very trustworthy. and, of course, so good at stitching things together, if you know what I mean.
"Those stitches round his head don't look very professional," said Polly, who was beginning to object to Maledict's permanent expression of effortless superiority.
"Oh, that, it's an Igor thing," said Maledict. "It's a look, like tribal scars, you know. They like them to show. Ha! We had a servant once who had stitches all the way round his neck, and he was extremely proud of them."
"Really?" said Polly weakly.
"Yes, and the droll part of it all was, it wasn't even his head."
Now Igor had a syringe in his hand, and was watching the sausage with an air of satisfaction. For a moment, Polly thought that the sausage moved.
"All right, all right. Time's up, you horrible lot," barked Corporal Strappy, strutting into the room. "Fall in? That means line up, you shower. That means you two parts. And you, Mr. Vampire Sir, will you be joining us for a morning's light soldiering? On your feet. And where's that bloody Igor?"
"Ah, Thar," said Igor from 3 inches behind Strappy's backbone. The corporal spun around.
"How do you get there?"
he bellowed.
"It's a gift, Thar," said Igor.
"Don't you ever get behind me again. Fall in with the rest of them. Now, attention!"
Strappy sighed theatrically.
"That means stand up straight, got it? Once more with feeling. Attention!" "Oh, I see the problem. You've got trousers that are permanently at ease. I think I shall have to write to the Duchess and tell her she should ask for her money back. What are you smiling about, Mr. Vampire, sir?"
Strappy positioned himself in front of Maledict, who stood faultlessly to attention.
"Happy to be in a regiment, Corporal."
"Yeah, right," mumbled Strappy. "Well, you won't be so." "Everything all right, Corporal?" asked Sergeant Jackram, appearing in the doorway. "Best we could expect, Sergeant," sighed the corporal. "We ought to throw him back. Oh, dear me, yes, useless, useless, useless." "Okay, lads, stand easy," said Jackram, glancing at Strappy in a less than friendly way. "Today we're heading on down toward Plotz, where we'll meet up with the other recruiting parties, and you'll be issued with your uniforms and weapons, you lucky lads. Any of you ever used a weapon? You have perks?"
Polly lowered her hand. "A bit, Sarge. My brother taught me a bit when he was home on leave, and some of the old men in the bar at home gave me some, tips." They had, too. It was funny to watch a girl waving a sword around, and they'd been kind enough when they weren't laughing. She was a quick learner, but she'd made a point of staying clumsy long after she'd got the feel for the blade, because using a sword was also the work of a man, and a woman doing it was an abomination unto Nuggan. Old soldiers, on the whole, were on the easy-going side when it came to abominations. She'd be funny just as long as she was useless, and safe as long as she was funny.
"Expert, are you?" said Strappy, grinning nastily. "A real fencing genius, are you?"
"No, Corporal," said Polly meekly.
"All right," said Jackram. "Anyone else? Hang on, Sarge. I reckon we'd all like a bit of instruction from Swordmeister Parts," said Strappy. "Ain't that right, lads?"
There was a general murmuring and shrugging from the squad, who recognised a right little bullying bastard when they saw one, but treacherously were glad he hadn't picked on them. Strappy drew his own sword.
"Lend him one of yours, Sarge," he said. "Go on, just a little bit of fun, eh?"
Jackram hesitated and glanced at Polly.
"How about it, lad? You don't have to," he said.
"I'll have to sooner or later," Polly thought. The world was full of Strappies. If you backed away from them, they only kept on coming. You had to stop them at the start. She sighed.
"Okay, Sarge."
Jackram pulled one of his cutlasses out of his sash and handed it to Polly. It looked amazingly sharp.
"He won't hurt you, Perks," he said, while looking at the smirking Strappy.
"I'll try not to hurt him either, Sarge," said Polly,
and then cursed herself for the idiot bravado. It must have been the socks talking.
"Oh, good," said Strappy, stepping back. "We'll just see what you're made of, Parts."
Flesh, thought Polly. Blood. Easily cut things. Oh, well. Strappy waved his sabre like the old boys had done, down low, in case she was one of those people who thought the whole idea was to hit the other man's sword. She ignored it and watched his eyes, which was no great treat. He wouldn't stick her, not mortally, not with Jackram watching.
He'd try for something that'd hurt and make everyone laugh at her. That was the strappy type through and through. Every inn counted one or two amongst its regulars. The corporal tested her more aggressively a couple of times, and twice, by luck, she managed to knock the blade out of the way. Luck would run out, though, and if she looked like putting up a decent show, Strappy would sort her out good and proper. Then she remembered the cackled advice of old Gummy Abbons, a retired sergeant who'd lost his left arm to a broadsword and all his teeth to cider.
"A good swordsman hates coming up against a newbie, girl. The reason being, he don't know what the bugger's going to do."
She swung the sabre wildly. Strappy had to block it, and for a moment the swords locked.
"That the best you can do, Parts?"
the corporal jeered. Polly reached out and grabbed his shirt. "No, corporal," she said, "but this is..." She pulled hard and lowered her head. The collision hurt more than she'd hoped, but she heard something crunch, and it didn't belong to her. She stepped back quickly, slightly dizzy, with the sabre at the ready. Strappy had sunk to his knees, blood gushing from his nose. When he got up, someone was going to die. Panting, Polly appealed wordlessly to Sergeant Jackram, who had folded his arms and was looking innocently at the ceiling.
"I bet you didn't learn that from your brother, Perks," he said.
"No, Sarge. Got that from Gummy Abbons, Sarge."
Jackram suddenly looked down at her, grinning.
"What, old Sergeant Abbons?"
"Yes, Sarge."
"There's a name from the past. He's still alive. How is the evil old sot?"
Well preserved, Sarge,"
Polly said, still trying to get her breath. Jackram laughed.
"Yeah, I'll bet. Did his best fighting in bars, he did. And I'll bet that's not the only trick he told you about, eh?"
"No, sir."
And the other men had scolded the old boy for telling her, and Gummy had chuckled into his cider mug, and anyway, it had taken Polly a long time to find out what family jewels meant.
"Hear that, Strappy?"
said the sergeant to the cursing man dribbling blood onto the floor.
"Looks like you was lucky. But there's no prizes for fighting fair in a melee, lads, as you shall learn. All right, fun over. Go and put some cold water on that, corporal. It always looks worse than it is. And that's the end of it, the pair of you. That is an order. A word to the wise, understood?"
"Yes, Sarge,"
said Polly meekly. Strappy grunted. Jackram looked at the rest of the recruits.
"Okay. Any of the rest of you boys ever held a stick? Right. I can see we're going to have to start slow and work up."
There was another grunt from Strappy. You had to admire the man. On his knees, with blood bubbling through the hand cupping his injured nose, he could find time to make life difficult for someone in some small way.
"Private Bloodflack has a snored, sergeant," he said accusingly. "Any good with it?"
said the sergeant to Maledict.
"Not really, sir," said Maledict. "Never had training. I carry it for protection, sir."
"How can you protect yourself by carrying a sword if you don't know how to use it?"
"Not me, sir. Other people. They see the sword and they don't attack me," said Maledict patiently.
"Yeah, but if they did, lad, you wouldn't be any good with it," said the sergeant.
"No, sir, I'd probably settle for just ripping their head off, sir. That's what I mean by protection, sir. Theirs, not mine. And I'd get hell from the League if I did that, sir."
The sergeant stared at him for a while.
"Well thought out," he mumbled.
There was a thud behind them, and a table overturned. Carborundum the troll sat upright, groaned, and crashed back down again. At the second attempt, he managed to stay upright, both hands clutching his head. Corporal Strappy, now on his feet, must have been made fearless by fury. He headed for the troll in a high-speed strut and stood in front of him, vibrating with rage and still oozing blood in sticky strings.
"You horrible little man!"
he screamed.
"You!"
Carborundum reached down and, with care and no apparent effort, picked the corporal up by his head. He brought him to one crusted eye and turned him this way and that.
"Did I join Darby?"
he rumbled.
"Oh, Corporalith!"
"This is an affront on a superior officer!" screamed the corporal in a muffled voice. "Put Corporal Strappy down, please," said Sergeant Jackram.
The troll grunted and lowered the man to the floor.
"Sorry about that," he said. "Thought you was a dwarf."
"I demand this man is arrested for—"
Strappy began.
"No, you don't, Corporal, no, you don't," said the sergeant. "This is not the time. On your feet, Carborundum, and get in line. Upon my oath, you try that little trick one more time and there will be trouble, understand?
Yes, Sergeant,
growled the troll, and knuckled himself to his feet.
Right, then, said the sergeant, stepping back. Now, today, my lucky lads, we're going to learn about something we call marching.
They left Plune to the wind and rain. About an hour after they'd vanished around a bend in the valley, the shed they'd slept in mysteriously burned down. There have been better attempts at marching, and they have been made by penguins. Sergeant Jackram brought up the rear in the cart, shouting instructions, but the recruits moved as if they'd never before had to get from place to place. The sergeant yelled the swagger out of their steps, stopped the cart, held an impromptu lesson in the concepts of right and left for a few of them, and by degrees they left the mountains. Polly remembered those first few days with mixed feelings. All they did was march, but she was used to long walks and her boots were good. The trousers ceased to chafe. A watery sun took the trouble to shine. It wasn't cold. It would have been fine if it hadn't been for the corporal. She wondered how Strappy, whose nose was now about the same colour as a plum, was going to handle the situation between them. It turned out that he intended to deal with it by pretending it hadn't happened, and also by having as little as possible to do with Polly. He didn't spare the others, although he was selective. Maledict was left strictly alone, as was Carborundum. Whatever else Strappy was, he wasn't suicidal. And he was bewildered by Igor. The little man did whatever stupid chores Strappy found for him, and he did them quickly, competently, and with every impression of someone happy in his work. And that left the corporal completely mystified. He'd pick on the others for no reason at all, harangue them until they made some trivial mistake, and then bawl them out. His target of choice was Private Goom, better known as Wazza, who was stick-thin and round-eyed and nervous and said grace loudly before meals. By the end of the first day, Strappy could make him throw up just by shouting. And then he'd laugh. Only he never really laughed, Polly noted. What you got instead was a sort of harsh gargling of spit at the back of the throat, a noise like... The presence of the man cast a damper on everything. Jackram seldom interfered. He often watched Strappy, though, and once, when Polly caught his eye, he winked. On the first night, a tent was shouted by Strappy off the cart and shouted up, and after a supper of stale bread and sausage had been shouted, they were shouted in front of a blackboard to be shouted at. Across the top of the board, Strappy had written, "What we are fighting for," and down the side he had written, "One, two, three."
"Right, pay attention," he said, slapping the board with a stick. "There's some who think that you boys ought to know why we are fighting this war, okay? Well, here it comes. Point one. Remember the town of Lips? It was viciously attacked by Slovenian troops a year ago. They—"
"Sorry, but I thought we attacked Lips, didn't we, Corporal? Last year, they said," Shufti began.
"Are you trying to be smart, Private Manacle?" Strappy demanded, naming the biggest sin in his personal list.
"Just want to know, Corporal," said Shufti.
He was stocky, running to plump, and one of those people who bustled about being helpful in a mildly annoying way, taking over small jobs that you wouldn't have minded doing for yourself. There was something odd about him, although you had to bear in mind he was currently sitting next to Wazza, who had enough odd for everybody and was probably contagious. And had caught Strappy's eye. There was no fun in having a go at Shufti, but Wazza now, Wazza was always worth a shout.
"Are you listening, Private Goom?" he screamed.
Wazza, who had been sitting and looking up with his eyes closed, jerked awake.
"Corporal?"
he quavered as Strappy advanced.
"I said, are you listening, Goom?"
"Yeah, Corporal,"
moaned Wazza, shaking with fear.
"Really? And what did you hear, may I ask?"
said Strappy in a voice of treacle and acid.
"Nothing, Corporal. She's not speaking."
Strappy took a deep, delighted breath of evil air.
"You are a useless, worthless pile of—"
There was a sound. It was a small, nondescript sound, one that you heard every day, a noise that did its job but never expected to be, for example, whistled or part of an interesting sonata. It was simply the sound of stone scraping on metal. On the other side of the fire, Jackram lowered his cutlass. He had a sharpening stone in his other hand. He returned their group stare.
"What? "Oh, just maintaining the edge," he said innocently. "Sorry if I interrupted your flow there, Corporal. Carry on."
A basic animal survival instinct came to the corporal's aid. He left the trembling Wazza alone and turned back to Shufti.
Yes, we attacked Lips too, said Strappy.
Was that before these Lobinians did? Said Maledict.
Will you listen? Strappy demanded. We valiantly attacked Libs to reclaim what is Borogravian territory, and then the treacherous Swedeaters stole it back.
Polly tuned out a little at this point, now that there was no immediate prospect of seeing Strappy decapitated. She knew about Libs. Half the old men who came and drank with her father had attacked the place. But no one had expected them to want to do it. Someone had just shouted, attack. The trouble was the Knek River. It wandered across the wide, rich, silty plain like a piece of dropped string, but sometimes a flash flood or even a big fallen tree would cause it to crack like a whip, throwing coils of river around areas of land miles from its previous bed. And the river was the international border. She surfaced to hear,
But this time everyone's on their side, the bastards. And you know why? It's 'cause of Ankh-Morpork. Because we stopped the mail coaches going over our country and tore down their Klax towers, which are an abomination unto Nuggan, Ankh-Morpork is a godless city.
I thought it had more than 300 places of worship, said Maledict.
Strappy stared at him in a rage that was incoherent until he managed to touch bottom again.
Ankh-Morpork is a god-awful city, he said. Poisonous, just like its river. Barely fit for humans now, they let everything in. Zombies, werewolves, dwarfs, vampires, trolls.
He remembered his audience, faltered and recovered.
Which, in some cases, can be a good thing, of course. But it is a foul, lewd, lawless, overcrowded mess of a place, which is why Prince Heinrich loves it so much. He's been taken over by it. Bought by cheap toys, because that's the way Ankh-Morpork plays it, men. They buy you. They will you stop interrupting. What's the good of me trying to teach you stuff if you're going to keep on asking questions?
I was just wondering why it's so crowded, Corp, said Tonka. If it's so bad, I mean.
That's because they are a degraded people, Private, and they've sent a regiment up here to help Heinrich take over our beloved motherland. He has turned aside from the ways of Nuggan and embraced Ankh-Morpork's god-awfulness.
Strappy looked pleased at having spotted that one and went on.
Point two. In addition to its soldiers, Ankh-Morpork has sent Vimes the Butcher, the most evil man in that evil city. They are bent on nothing less than our destruction.
I heard that Ankh-Morpork was just angry that we cut the Klax towers down, said Polly.
They were on our sovereign territory.
Well, it was Lobinian until...
Polly began. Strappy waved an angry finger at her.
You listen to me, Parts. You can't get to be a great country like Borogravia without making enemies. Which leads me on to point three, Parts, who's sitting there thinking he's so smart. You all are. I can see it. Well, be smart about this. You might not like everything about your country, eh? It might not be the perfect place, but it's ours. You might think we don't have the best laws, but they are ours. The mountains might not be the prettiest ones or the tallest ones, but they are ours. We're fighting for what's ours, men.
Strappy slammed his hand over his heart.
Awake, ye sons of the motherland. Taste no more the wine of the sour apples.
They joined in with various levels of drone. You had to. Even if you just opened and shut your mouth, you had to. Even if you just went, no, 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 you had to. Polly, who was exactly the kind of person who looks around surreptitiously at times like these, saw that Shufti was singing it word perfectly, and Strappy actually did have tears in his eyes. Wazza wasn't singing at all. He was praying. That was a good wheeze, said one of the more treacherous areas at the back of Polly's mind. To the bewilderment of all, Strappy continued alone all through the second verse, which nobody ever remembered, and then gave them a smug, I'm more patriotic than you smile. Afterwards, they tried to sleep on as much softness as two blankets could provide. They lay there in silence for some time. Jackram and Strappy had tents of their own, but instinctively they knew that Strappy at least would be a sneaker and a listener at tent flaps.
After about an hour, when rain was drumming on the canvas, Carborundum said,
OK, then, I think I've worked it out. If people are groupar stupid, then we'll fight for groupar stupidity, 'cause it's our stupidity. And that's good, yeah?
Several of the squad sat up in the darkness, amazed at this. I realise I ought to know these things, but what does groupar mean? Said the voice of Maledict in the damp darkness.
Oh, well, when, right, a daddy troll and a mummy troll.
Good, right, yes, I think I've got it. Thank you, said Maledict. And what you've got there, my friend, is patriotism. My country, right or wrong.
You should love your country, said Shufting. Okay, what part?
The voice of Tonka demanded from the far corner of the tent.
The morning sunlight on the mountains, the horrible food, the damn mad abominations, all of my country except whatever bit Strappy is standing on. But we are at war.
Yes, that's where they've got you, sighed Polly.
Well, I'm not buying into it. It's all trickery. They keep you down, and when they piss off some other country, you have to fight for them. It's only your country when they want you to get killed, said Tonka. All the good business country in this tent, said the voice of Wazza.
Embarrassed silence descended. The rain settled in. After a while, the tent began to leak. Eventually, someone said,
What happens, if you join up, but then you decide you don't want to?
That was Shufting.
I think that's called deserting, and they cut your head off, said the voice of Maledict. In my case, that would be a drawback, but you, dear Shufty, would find it simply puts a big crimp in your social life.
I never kissed their damn picture, said Tonka. I swiveled it round when Strappy wasn't looking and kissed it on the back.
They'll still say you kissed the Duchess, though, said Maledict.
You kissed the Duchess on the bottom, said Wazza, horrified. It was the back of the picture, okay, said Tonka. It wasn't her real backside. Huh? Wouldn't have kissed it if it was.
There was some unidentified sniggering from various corners and just a hint of giggle.
That was wicked, hissed Wazza. Nuggin in heaven saw you do that. It was just a picture, all right, muttered Tonka. Anyway, what's the difference, front or back, we're all here together, and I don't see any steak and bacon.
Something rumbled overhead.
I joined to see exciting foreign places and meet erotic people, said Carborundum.
That caused a moment's thought.
I think you mean exotic, said Igor.
Yeah, that kind of stuff, agreed the troll.
But they always lie, said someone, and then Polly realised it was her. They lie all the time about everything.
Amen to that, said Tonka. We fight for liars.
Ah, they may be liars, snapped Polly, in a passable imitation of Strappy's yap, but they're our liars.
Now, now, children, said Maledict, let's try to get some sleep, shall we? But here's a happy little dream from your Uncle Maledict. Dream that when we go into battle, Corporal Strappy is leading us. Wouldn't that be fun?
After a while, Tonka said,
In front of us, you mean?
Oh, yes, I can see you're with me, Tonk, right in front of you, on the noisy, frantic, confusing battlefield, where oh so much can go wrong.
And we'll have weapons, said Shufti wistfully.
Of course you'll have weapons, your soldiers. And there's the enemy right in front of you.
That's a good dream, Mal.
Sleep on it, kid.
Polly turned over and tried to make herself comfortable. It's all lies, she thought muzzily. Some of them are just prettier than others, that's all. People see what they think is there. Even I'm a lie, but I'm getting away with it. A warm autumnal wind was blowing leaves off the rowan trees as the recruits marched among the foothills. It was the morning of the next day, and the mountains were behind them. Polly passed the time identifying the birds in the hedgerows. It was a habit. She knew most of them. She hadn't set out to be an ornithologist, but birds brought Paul alive. All the slowness in the rest of his thinking became a flash of lightning in the presence of birds. Suddenly he knew their names, habits, and habitats, could whistle their songs, and, after Polly had saved up for a box of paints off a traveller at the inn, had painted a picture of a wren so real you could hear it. Their mother had been alive then. The row had gone on for days. Pictures of living creatures were an abomination in the eyes of Nuggan. Polly had asked why there were pictures of the Duchess everywhere, and had been thrashed for it. The picture had been burned, the paints thrown away. It was a terrible thing. Her mother had been a kind woman, or as kind as a devout woman could be, while trying to keep up with the whims of Nuggan, and she died slowly and painfully, amid pictures of the Duchess and among the echoes of unanswered prayers. But that was the memory that crawled treacherously into Polly's mind every time, the fury and the scolding, while the little bird seemed to flutter in the flames. In the fields, women and old men were getting in the spoiled wheat after last night's rain, hoping to save what they could. There weren't any young men visible. Polly saw some of the other recruits steal a glance at the scavenging parties, and wondered if they were thinking the same thing. They saw no one else on the road until midday, when the party was marching through a landscape of low hills. The sun had boiled away some of the clouds, and, for a moment at least, summer was back, moist and sticky and mildly unpleasant, like a party guest who won't go home. A red blob in the distance became a rather larger blob, and resolved itself into a loose knot of men. Polly knew what to expect as soon as she saw it. By the reaction of some of the others, they did not. There was a moment of collision and confusion as people walked into one another, and then the party stopped and stared. It took the wounded men some time to draw level and some time to pass. Two able-bodied men, as far as Polly could tell, were trundling a handcart on which a third man lay. Others were limping on crutches or had arms in slings, or wore red jackets with an empty sleeve. Perhaps worse were the ones like the man in the inn, grey-faced, staring straight ahead, jackets buttoned tight despite the heat. One or two of the injured glanced at the recruits as they lurched past, but there was no expression in their eyes beyond a terrible determination. Jackram reined in the horse. "All right, 20 minutes breather," he muttered. Igor turned, nodded to the party of wounded heading grimly onward, and said, "Permit them to see if I can do anything for them, Sarge." "You'll get your chance soon enough, lad," said the sergeant.
"Sarge," said Igor, looking hurt.
"All right, if you must. Do you want someone to give you a hand?" There was a nasty laugh from Corporal Strappy.
"Some assistance would be a help, yes, sergeant," said Igor with dignity.
Sergeant looked at the squad and nodded.
"Private Alter, step forward. Know anything about doctoring?"
The red-headed Tonker stepped forward smartly.
"I butchered pigs for me, ma'am, Sarge," he said.
"Capital. Better than an army surgeon, upon my oath. Off you go, 20 minutes, remember." "And don't let Igor bring back any souvenirs," said Strappy, and laughed his scraping laugh again.
The rest of the boys sat down on the grass by the road, and one or two of them disappeared into the bushes. Polly went on the same errand, but pushed in a lot further, and took the opportunity to make a little sock adjustment. They had a tendency to creep if she wasn't careful. She froze at a rustling behind her, and then relaxed. She'd been careful. No one would have seen anything. So what if someone else was taking a leak? She'd just push her way back to the road and take no notice. Lofty sprang up as Polly parted the bushes, breeches around one ankle, face red as a beetroot. Polly couldn't help herself. Maybe it was the socks. Maybe it was the pleading expression on Lofty's face. When someone's broadcasting "don't look," the eyes have a mind of their own and go where they're not wanted. Lofty jumped up, dragging at her clothes.
"No, look, it's all right," Polly began, but it was too late. The girl had gone.
Polly stared at the bushes and thought, "Blast!
There's two of us." But what would I have said next? "It's okay, I'm a girl too. You can trust me. We could be friends. Oh, and here's a good tip about socks,"